Welcome into our studios here. We got the Wednesday vibes. I'm George Savarikas alongside Anna Jackson. This is Golf Today here with you for the next couple hours. We're basking in the afterglow of what has been a dominant run for Scottie Scheffler, and it's the PGA Tour. So we still have a lot of golf left until we decide a FedEx Cup champion. So as you were heading into the Golf Channel Worldwide headquarters today.
Yes.
What was top of mind for you, Anna?
Oh, you don't want to know that, George, but I can tell you, I have been thinking, you're right, we are in the afterglow. And I feel like this week, the golf world is sort of just taking a breath to sit back and just kind of stew and soak in what we have witnessed from Scottie, not just last week, but also this season. And we're getting to that point now where he has shown us enough to make us ask these questions. What are we actually looking at here, George? Are we looking at a generational talent? Are we looking at the dominance of the game for the next 5-10 years? How many majors are we looking at? We're starting to ask real, real questions about the future of Scottie Scheffler and the impact that he's going to have on this game. Or winning isn't fulfilling at all, and he's going to pack it in 5 years' time. You know, it's just, I think we've seen enough now and we've learned enough and we can get excited about what the future holds, but it's just so hard to predict. But that's what we love to do.
Well, and we've had these periods in golf and dating back to the 70s. You have an emperor who kind of takes the throne. And Jack had that throne for 10, 15 years. And then you get to the 80s, Tom Watson, Seve, Nick Faldo. You had other guys who had their periods, and then Tiger cemented himself for 10 to 15 years. And since then, it's been a cast of characters, post-Tiger, Rory for a bit, other guys, Brooks Koepka have had their periods, Jordan Spieth, but now we're wondering, okay, is this going to be a prolonged residency for Scottie Scheffler? Is this going to be a 10 to 15-year arc, or is this a period of time that we're going to look back and maybe it was 5, 7, however many years? So. Yeah. Who knows? It's fun to try and project forward what's going to happen.
It is. It's impossible, though. We never thought it would take Rory 10 years to win another major. It's one of those things. It's the kind of game where anything can happen. But still, it is Scottie who all eyes are on still as we reflect on last week, because the talk continues to surround the world at number one following that Open Championship victory just last week. Now, last year, he put a bow on an incredible season with a win at Eastlake, taking home his first career FedEx Cup title. So with major season in the books, all eyes now turn towards the FedEx Cup playoffs. Just two events remain before the start of the playoffs in August. As we know, it is the top 70 in the standings who will advance to the FedEx St. Jude Championship, then the top 50 onto the BMW Championship, and the top 30 to the Tour Championship. Well, this week marks the penultimate event then in the PGA Tour's regular season as TPC Twin Cities hosts the seventh playing of the 3M Open. Several notable names in the field, including the likes of Sam Burns, Luke Clanton, Wyndham Clark, Max Homer, Siwoo Kim, Mark McNealy, Adam Scott, and Tony Finau.
Anna, speaking of Finau, he's making a seventh start, has never missed the cut with the win back in 2022. That year, it was a final round 67, his fourth round of the week, 68 or better. Erased a five-shot deficit with 11 to go as Scott Piercy tumbled down the stretch. Finau finished the week at 17 under, beating Emiliano Grillo and Sungjae Im by three. He enters the week barely inside the top 60 in the FedEx standings. You see his season results has had five top 25 finishes. He has 59th, had reached the Tour Championship 8 consecutive seasons. That is tied for the longest active streak with Xander Schauffele. There's some weather in the area in the Twin Cities, so Finau moving inside with our Amy Rogers.
Tony, you just seem to be a fixture here at the 3M Open each year, not just a winner, but two more top tens. What is it about playing here at TPC Twin Cities that seems to bring out your best?
Yeah, I've got a decent record. It's just fun being back at a golf course that you've had some success and some great memories. It's a good golf course. I think it's a golf course that yields some birdies. And just a lot different test than last week at the Open Championship. And it's a week that, I look forward to being back at playing every year.
Coming off the final major championship of the season, moving into this closing stretch, how would you assess your overall game at this point in the season?
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a struggle. It hasn't been my best season up to this point. But, with the experience that I have, on any given week, I know you can change the course of your season. So, I'm optimistic about this week. Again, being a course that I've enjoy some success, and the prep work's been good so far this week, and looking forward to teeing it up tomorrow.
There's still a lot to play for, even though we're moving into this closing stretch of the season. What's your mindset and your approach as we move into these final few weeks of the year?
Yeah, the PGA Tour has become a tour that you really want to crack that top 50. I'm on the outside looking in at the moment, so that's a huge thing on my mind. You know, I need to finish the season strong if I want to play and make a run at the playoffs. And so that's where my mind's at, you know, and that starts tomorrow here. And I'm looking forward to the challenge. You have to, you know, no matter how your season's going. Again, you know, nothing's going to change if you think too far ahead. So just focus on tomorrow and trying to put together a good round.
Well, you're not the only one, Tony, looking for some all-important FedEx Cup points. He will get his first round underway tomorrow, 8:29 a.m. Eastern, alongside Taylor Pendrith and Ricky Fowler. Well, as you mentioned, following next week's Wyndham Championship, it is the top 70 players in the FedEx Cup standings who will earn a spot into the all-important FedEx Cup playoffs. Now, there are 18 players in the 3M Open field ranked between 60 and 80 in the standings entering the week. So some of those notable names include the likes of Erik van Rooyen, Ricky Fowler at 63, Keith Mitchell at 70, Davis Thompson, Eric Cole, Christian Bezuidenhout, Chris Kirk and Gary Woodland at 78.
And I mentioned van Rooyen entering the week at number 62 in the standings thanks to a strong performance last week. Barracuda Championship wound up finishing in solo second. Now has three top 10 finishes, including two runner-up finishes this season on the PGA Tour. And we have Erik van Rooyen with us now. Erik, before we spin it ahead to this week, you're coming off your second runner-up finish last week at the Barracuda Championship. Both of the times you finished second this year, it was immediately after what had been maybe a lull in parts of your PGA Tour season. What clicks in your game when you put it together like that?
Honestly, this season, the piece that's been lacking has been the putter. It's been a bit cold, so I putted great in Dallas when Scotty won, and I putted great last week, and that seems to have been the difference. You know, the weekend in Scotland prior to the Barracuda, Thursday, Friday, I was 7th-9 play and missed the cut, and so I was like 140th in putting, so something needed to change. My dad told me a change is good as a holiday, and he seems to have some wisdom every now and then. I made a switch in putters last week, and it paid off.
I was going to mention, Erik, of course, as you said, two runner-up finishes this season, one of which being at the Byron Nelson. Now, granted, Scotty did lap the field by 8 that week, but still, it was a really nice week from you. What can you take away from these ups and downs that you've had this season?
Well, that the game's there. You know, I think something that Scotty is doing so well is the consistency is absolutely incredible, and I think that's something we all strive for. For me, it's been quite the opposite this season, unfortunately. Couple of good finishes, but then, you know, lulls in between. So just a little consistency with the flat stick.
Erik, Alex had told me a story that you're playing the Nelson in that final round with Scotty. You're 8-under through 14, and I think you had the tee box once at that point. When you have a front row seat and you're on the front end of what had turned into this incredible run for Scotty from the Nelson through the Open, 4 wins and 2 majors. When you see that up close and you're matching them shot for shot and you can't gain any ground, what's the experience like?
Mixed emotions. On the one hand, I can't believe that I didn't gain any ground. And on the other hand, pretty cool being able to match the world number one shot for shot, albeit it was only for one round, you know. I'd like to take away that the good play is in there. We just have to find a way to make it come out a bit more often.
Erik, you're obviously 62nd in the FedEx Cup standings right now. When it comes to this part of the season and there's so much to play for, what is the goal and what is the motivation for you right now as you stand at that point in the rankings?
Jeez, I've played a lot of golf, but I think right now we're kind of in the final push heading into the playoffs and really just get as far as I possibly can. I was in a similar position in 2021 where I won the Barracuda and then played my way all the way into the championship. So I've done it before. Hopefully the putter can continue to cooperate and I can do that again this year.
What are the emotions like for you when you're back in the Twin Cities? You have such a strong connection to the area from your college days playing at Minnesota.
Oh, it's great. I've got such good memories playing here with old teammates. I've got a lot of people that want to come watch this week, so that'll be a lot of fun. My caddy Alex actually Monday qualified a couple of years ago for this event, and we got to play together. So it's quite a special place for me. I'm staying with the in-laws this week, so it really is a home away from home. Every year I try to go back to campus, even though there's not much going on, just to walk around and reminisce where we went to school and a lot of really cool memories. So it's a special place.
It's nice to have friends and family around you on a big week like this. As you mentioned, the aim is to try and play yourself into the Tour Championship come the end of August. How different do those playoffs feel when there are cuts at the end of every week and the pressure is building and there's so much points and playing opportunities on the line?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, you know, with the tour, with how the schedule's set out these days, everyone's trying to get into the elevated events, finish top 50 and, you know, push for the top 30 even to get into all the major championships the next year. So that'd be awesome. But what makes the playoffs great is there's so many points on the line that if you're peaking at the right time, you can do it. You can play your way into tour champs and even give yourself a chance to win this thing. So so much to play for.
Are you a thumbs up to the new format of starting from scratch? No more staggered leaderboard. Are you a fan?
Yeah, I'm not too sure. I think Tour Championships has always been a tricky format to get right. I think I'll hold off any opinions until we see how this year goes. But like I said, it's hard to find a way to award the guy that played the best all season, but then still keep the playoffs really exciting, especially to a championship. So we'll see how this year plays out and see if we got it right.
Well, we'll see if that putter switch, and I was on the call last week with Graham Dillette, and he was saying it looks so good behind the ball. We'll see if that putter switch can be what buoys you for the end of the regular season and into the playoffs. Play well this week, Eric.
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks so much, guys. Thanks for your time.
Just a quick reminder, Scottie Scheffler, world number one, pretty good. So we're going to rip through his four wins that he's had this season, all started at the CJ Cup. Byron Nelson, wire-to-wire fashion after shooting a 61 in round one, 31 under, 253, tied the PGA Tour's aggregate scoring record held by Justin Thomas, Ludvig Åberg. All Scottie did was win by 8 for his first dub this season. Won again in his next start, PGA Championship. Third career major victory, led by 3 entering the final round, was caught in the front nine by Jon Rahm. They're each tied at 9 under. Scheffler reached the turn, never looked back. Round up winning by 5 at Quail Hollow. Another impressive major performance. More from Scottie at the Memorial. Second straight year, his third win of 2025. Scheffler able to win the Memorial back-to-back. Shot 68 round 3 to take a one-stroke lead, then a final round 70 to win by 4 over Ben Griffin, who carded a 73. He is the first back-to-back winner of the Memorial since Tiger Woods turned the trick from 99 to 2001.
That's right, and he wasn't done yet. On Sunday, the 29-year-old became the champion golfer of the year, winning the 153rd Open at Royal Portrush. 4 majors to his name, and now just one leg shy of the career Grand Slam, which he could complete with a win next year at the US Open. Well, how has he done it? Well, George, this is going to help. Ranked first this season, tee to green, off the tee approach, has made some dramatic improvements to his putting over the last 6 months or so, now just ranked outside the top 20, and overall gaining over 2.5 strokes on the field in total strokes gained. So with that, time now for a Golf Today roundtable as we welcome in Todd Lewis and New York Post sports columnist Mark Cannizzaro. Chaps, really good to see you both. Todd, going to come to you first. Don't exactly know where you are in the world right now, but I know you are fresh off your week at Royal Portrush. You spent a good amount of time with the champion golfer of the year, Scottie Scheffler. What did you glean from the week and what he was able to achieve and how he managed to achieve it?
Well, I see the continued evolution of Scottie Scheffler into becoming probably the strongest mental player since Tiger Woods. I mean, we could talk about the mechanics if what he's been able to do. He controls the face of the golf club so beautifully. Jordan Spieth said maybe the best ever. strategically right in the middle of the fairway, in the middle of the greens, giving himself great opportunities for birdies because his distance control is so strong. But, I mean, mentally, I think he's just far superior than everyone else. You go back to what he said earlier in the week prior to competition about how golf is important, but it's not the most important thing in his life. I think there's a lot to that. I mean, if you look at the GOATs in all of sports, I mean, Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tom Brady, they kind of lived a bit for that fame of excelling and being the greatest in their sport. Scottie Scheffler is the biggest name in golf right now, especially from a performance perspective, but he wants to be so small. I find that to be so interesting. And look, and let's not ignore the fact that his faith is a big component in that. In this day where there's all these sports psychologists and how they try to help players, especially in golf, I mean, Scottie Scheffler is pretty simple. He tries to prepare the best he can, maximize the talents that he has, shows up, hits the ball, and after that, it's not up to him in his mind. It's up to a higher power. That is a tremendous amount of freedom when you show up on the golf course. And so he's excelling mentally and emotionally, and I think that carries over into what he does moving forward in his career. I started doing some math here, guys. If he wins, let's say, 1.5 majors for the next 10 years, I mean, we're talking about a guy who's going to win 15 more majors. He's not even 30. I didn't think, actually, in my opinion, that because of the depth globally of golf, that no one would surpass Phil Mickelson at 45 PGA Tour wins. If Scottie Scheffler wins 3 tournaments a year for the next 10 years, that's 47. So he's got tremendous talent, both mechanically, strategically, mentally, and emotionally. I mean, he's elite right now.
But Todd, 1.5 majors per year. We might have to pump the brakes for the next 10, 11 years. Well, he's only had 4 majors in the last 4 years. So that math is just true. Astronomical to get to 19. That I got to double click on that.
Okay, fair. I mean, that's a what if, and you're right. But the prime years generally are after the 30s. I mean, do you see him regressing? Is that what you're saying?
Well, there have been 3 guys prior to Scottie Scheffler since 2010, who won 3 or more majors in the same span or less. Brooks Koepka, Rory McIlroy, and Jordan Spieth. When they all won their third or fourth, none of us said at the time, they're done winning. It was always, they could get to 7, they could get to 10. What are their projections going to look like? So, Mark, I'd love for you to weigh in. How long does this run last?
Yeah, I'm kind of in between you guys. One and a half majors, you know, is a lot to project, but Scotty has that in him. There's no question about it. And Todd and I were both obviously at Port Rush. And when I listened to the players afterward talking about Scotty, and even before the final round, I was flashing back to the guys talking about Tiger that were trying to beat him. I think pretty much everybody knew that Scotty was putting that golf tournament to sleep on Sunday, when they walked out the door on Saturday night. So I refer back to what Scotty was talking about on the Tuesday with us in his pre-tournament press conference, which left a lot of people slack-jawed a little bit. But as Todd said, I think there was a lot underpinning there about his faith. Scotty's a guy who's a very, very religious man, but he doesn't bang you over the head with it. And I felt like the things that he said that day on Tuesday were very, very much religious-oriented and kind of what Todd was talking about, how freed up he is, how these things, you know, the material things aren't important to him. And that is a very freeing thing. And the one thing I wonder when I got out of that Tuesday thing is how long will Scotty be interested in mowing everybody down? Him and Tiger were completely different animals. Tiger, golf was it for Tiger. He was the opposite of Scotty. The column I wrote that day after that Tuesday was that Scotty was literally like the anti-Tiger because everything else meant more to Scotty than golf. And with Tiger, golf was it. You know, he was possessed to get to that number 18 with Jack, you know, with the major championships. The one thing I would say that would keep Scotty into it is his competitiveness. And Todd knows well, he's been around him a lot, as I have. Scotty's demeanor does not tell you that he's a guy that likes to step on people's necks, but Scotty loves doing that. And I did a huge piece on Ted Scott, his caddy, for the Sunday before the Open. And some of the things that Ted told me about Scotty were so revealing about how competitive he was. He literally said, you know, he would play a 9-year-old girl in anything, whether it was, you know, golf or anything, basketball, you know, a game of horse, and would laugh in her face to beat her, you know, and because that's literally, I mean, this is what drives Scotty. And so I think that that drive and that thirst for that competitive, you know, that carrot, if you will keep him going, even though the other stuff's more important to him.
It is so interesting. And Mark, just to pick up on it, on a phrase that you used there, and Todd, I'm going to throw this one at you, but Mark said, Scotty put that tournament to sleep over the weekend. Now, Scotty Scheffler, as you just mentioned there, he is not the all entertainment, all electric fireworks kind of character. Yeah, Tiger Woods put tournaments to sleep, but he did it in a pretty thrilling way because he got himself in trouble and then he got himself out of trouble in such an exciting fashion. We don't tend to have that with Scotty because he just keeps the ball out in front of him and he keeps it generally very simple, error-free, and just dominates the field, as we've learned over the last couple of years. That character, that style of world number one who doesn't find winning fulfilling, is that good for the game and for the engagement of the fans of what is ultimately an entertainment product?
Okay, and that's a fair question. I hear a lot of people making these comparisons to Tiger from what he's been able to do with a golf ball, but you know, can he do what Tiger did in regards to elevating the popularity of the game? And the answer to that is no. I mean, Tiger Woods urbanized the game of golf. I mean, he brought golf into the inner city. He was an incredible athlete, probably at the time when he was competing, the most recognizable person on the planet outside maybe the President of the United States. So that's not going to happen. I agree with you there. But at the same time, we have seen, look at viewership at the Open. It's up more. I have seen a huge groundswell at tournaments now, where because Scotty Scheffler is just so consistently good, and maybe for several reasons, maybe the fact that they see a legend in the making here with Scotty Scheffler, maybe parents are taking their kids out there saying, look, this could be a role model for you. But I have seen an abundance of large galleries around Scotty Scheffler. Absolutely. When you have an elite player like he is, it's definitely going to elevate the game. And the question now is who is going to threaten him. But Mark is right. I talked to those players Saturday night. Every one of them were trying to be optimistic. They knew it wasn't impossible that they could beat Scotty Scheffler, but they knew it was improbable.
They were speaking in the reverence tones that are usually saved for someone on the Mount Rushmore, like a Tiger or a Jack. And it was the same type of chatter for Scotty going into the final round. Mark, we struggle to get direct comps in golf to describe and wrap our arms around Scotty Scheffler. Is he reminiscent of any other stars in other sports that comes to mind on how allergic he is to fame, yet how excellent he is in his pursuit of being the best in the sport that he plays?
You know, we're talking about goats here, and Scotty's he's the goat at the moment. Tom Brady is a guy to me, you know, yes, he's famous because of who he was or who he is and what he was accomplishing back in those days on the football field. But Tom Brady was a guy that went out of his way to take less money in his contracts so the Patriots could afford to bring other players in under the salary cap, because Tom Brady just wanted to win. He didn't care about being the highest paid quarterback or the highest paid player in the world or in football, I should say. He wanted to win. And that is really what built his legacy, was the winning, you know, and that's what Scotty's doing. And just a quick one, just jump on what Todd was saying in your question to Todd, fans are attracted to greatness. They gravitate to greatness. Dominance, if you look at TV ratings in all sports, dominance attracts people. And that's, I think, why what Todd was referring to there a little bit, George, is, you know, they're drawn to Scotty because they kind of see the potential that we might be seeing something building like a Tiger Woods or Jack Nicklaus numbers or whatever, just to throw, you know, these guys out there. There's a long way to go to get to those places. But I think that Brady, to me, because, yes, he was very famous, but, you know, he was never looking for fame, you know, and he still doesn't, even though a lot of people would say he's overexposed, but he's overexposed just because there's so much interest in him and he married a supermodel, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So, but I think at the end of the day, you know, Brady wanted to do the only things that Scotty Scheffler wanted to do was win. And he made concessions in his, you know, personally to be able to do that.
Yeah, and Mark, you picked up on the fact that the rest of the golfing world, all of the players on the PGA Tour, are picking up and commenting on just how dominant Scotty could be, will be, including Todd Rory, who said that Scotty's just setting the bar right now for everybody else. It was a huge week for Rory. He kind of walked away with everything that he needed to, arguably, other than the claret jug. But to have that homecoming and to just feel the passion and the juices for the game again, do you feel like he's out of that post-Grand Slam slump and he's refocused, remotivated it, and kind of refound that purpose?
I think
Yeah, I do. I think it was it's going to be kind of a blip on the radar for Rory's career. He was bouncing prior to round one. He was engaged and excited to be playing for more than just himself. And he embraced that, what was indeed pressure, playing in Northern Ireland, his home country, which is something that was completely 180 than what I saw in 2019, where he was saying, I'm just going to treat this like any other major championship. And, you know, when he hit that first tee and hit it out of bounds, obviously it was overwhelming to him. His driver was erratic. That pretty much killed his chances in trying to win. But I feel like... mentally, emotionally, spiritually, that Rory is back to kind of pre-Masters. I'm not too concerned about his commitment to excellence moving forward.
Mark, could you make a case for Rory McIlroy, Player of the Year?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, let's see what happens in the playoffs. If I could just kind of jump off what Todd was saying there for a second, Anna, I really feel like that Port Rush and last week was the elixir to get Tiger, I mean, to get Rory out of that funk. He even said it to a couple of us that we spoke to him at Oakmont. He said, if I cannot get up for an open championship at Portrush, I'm not going to be able to get up for anything. And he was up for it, and he changed his approach, as Todd said, and embraced the things that he was trying to ignore in 2019. And I really think that, you know, last week was a win for Rory. I keep going to Tiger, I'm sorry. It was a win for Rory, even without the trophy, because of the fact that he exercised the demons, you know, and the disappointment and heartbreak of 19. He gave his home country a good show. And quite frankly, he, like everybody else, knew that there was no shame in losing to Scottie Scheffler because he was better than everybody else, you know. So, that was sorry, my phone was going off. I think that was a big win. My apologies for that. But, I think Rory is now ready to kind of, as Todd said, you know, he's ready to go and have that hunger back again and chase greatness. And let's see what he does in the playoffs here. But I think it's going to be fascinating to see what happens, in terms of Player of the Year.
And let's see what he does, not just in the playoffs, but as well as at the Ryder Cup, as Europe's trying to win on American soil. An addendum this week. Nothing gets us more excited than a news dump with an addendum to the Ryder Cup captaincy, allowing Keegan Bradley to have someone else be captain if he is a playing captain. I've heard a case for and a case against, Mark, for Keegan Bradley. The case for is that he would help the team as a player. The case against is that if he plays, it would hurt his captaincy because then he's spreading himself too thin. Would love your take if we zoom out. Overall, would Keegan playing help the U.S. Ryder Cup team or hurt? And Todd, if you want to tail Mark.
I'm all in on Keegan playing. He's had a really good year. Again, he has tailed a little bit off, but he's still been competitive and playing well. I think that the U.S. team could use his fire on the golf course. To me, it's more valuable than his fire in a team room, in my opinion. He embraces this. He hungers. He's just absolutely starved for what the Ryder Cup is. And we all know 2 years ago how gutted he was. And quite frankly, I thought it was a massive mistake on the part of Jack Johnson not to take him last time. So I do believe, listen, they have, 35 assistant captains. You know, Jim Furyk, who's done it before, can step in and take care of those responsibilities. I'm all in on Keegan playing.
I would be shocked if he's not playing, especially with the news that he and Luke Donald, who was his good friend, have come to a captain's agreement that if Keegan is playing and he's out on the course, that he can assign a proxy, which would likely be Jim Furyk, to do the captain's duties while he's in between the ropes competing. I think it can happen, and I'm not saying Keegan can't do it. The only concern I have is that if Keegan is a playing captain, we all know that he is such an emotional player, that he would be, I guess, the duties off the golf course would take away from him being the elite player or all 100% invested on the golf course. In other words, it could be draining off the golf course trying to meet with the media each and every day. And he's, you know, none of the other 11 players on that team, if he's a playing captain, would have to do that or give the speech at the opening ceremony or, you know, consistently thinking about, this is my team, I'm the captain. That could weigh on him. He mentally and emotionally has to have everything in check if he's going to be a playing captain. But I think right now he's a greater strength as a player than a captain, if you had to choose. But if they can manage that well, which I think wheels are in motion that will happen, then yes, he could be an asset as a playing captain.
Certainly giving us a lot to talk about. We're 2 months away until the start of play, September 26th at Bethpage in New York. Gents, enjoyed it. And Todd, hopefully they let you out of detention soon.
Probably not.
I have to write on the board, I will not say anything stupid 100 times.
That's going to be very difficult, Todd. Good luck with that.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, guys.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Well, earlier this month, an incredible event, the U.S. Adaptive Open, took place at Woodmont Country Club, Rockville, Maryland. And after setting the 36-hole championship scoring record, England's Kit Popat entered the final round with a 10-stroke lead and cruised to a 7-under 65 and a 12-stroke win. The victory was his third straight in the U.S. Adaptive Open. And check this out as well. Popat not just winning, but became just the fourth male golfer in USGA history to win the same championship 3 years running, joining none other than the great Tiger Woods. So with that, I'm so pleased to welcome in the champion into golf today. Kip, congratulations on another incredible week at the US Adaptive Open. What were your expectations coming into this week? Because I know you haven't been at full health this year. And did you surpass even the performance that you thought you'd be able to put together?
I've never shot 11 under, so I guess so. But I had an operation at the start of the year, and my foot's been taking a while to sort of get comfy and get better. So hitting a ball I was okay at, but the strain of travel and walking was quite affecting my foot quite a lot. So yeah, I was just really pleased to play the way I did and to win three on the bounce. I think as soon as I won two, I was eyeing up the third one and I wasn't sure if I'd get the opportunity. So I'm just pleased I took advantage of it.
Kip, on your Instagram, and you've ripped off so many victories, you have the label, it says world's number one disability golfer. How important is that label to you?
Extremely important. I mean, I grew up with there was no disabled ranking. There was no disabled tournaments. I wanted to become the best golfer I could be. I wanted to be world number one in able-bodied golf. And it really has given me a massive purpose off the golf course and sort of a purpose with a golf club to try and grow disabled golf to a point that the next generation have the opportunity to play for a living. We don't have prize money in disability golf, but companies are starting to get on board. So Deloitte really helped out this year with covering players' travel expenses, which makes a massive difference. So,
Kip, you're such an amazing role model when it comes to golf with players with disabilities and adaptive golf. As you say, when you were growing up, there were no national championships on TV. This is the first year that Golf Channel televised the final round of the USGA's Adaptive Open. How much have you seen the opportunities grow in your time in the game? And just, I guess it's just a very different landscape and a different world for golfers with disabilities looking to, create a career out of this.
It's changed massively. The DP World Tour came on board about 4 or 5 years ago, and that made a massive difference to provide the best players in the world opportunities to play on world-class golf courses with tournaments set up. I want it to keep growing further because I want the world's 50th player to be in the position I'm in right now where I get to play full-time. And I think I know how much golf helped me through the tough times and gave me a purpose when I was on the physio table or when I was practicing, even when my foot was sore. So if people seeing me win trophies or seeing any of the other boys and girls win trophies helps them through their tough times and gives them an ability to, I would say, press on, then I'd be very happy.
Seeing some of your highlights from your victories at the U.S. Adaptive Open, over the course of your playing career, how have you been able to help bridge the gap between disabled and able-bodied golfers, especially with what you were able to do on the Asian Tour end of last year?
Yeah, I mean, I've been very fortunate to have two parents that have always given me every opportunity, and then the sponsors that came on board that have, you know, really given me a chance to get all the physio and play full time. I've managed to qualify for the British Amateur the last 4 years, and that's been quite a big stepping stone. Haven't played my best stuff, but I nearly qualified for the US Am this year and shot 5 under. So that was I've only been playing maybe for 6 weeks. I was really pleased with how quick I managed to get my game back post-surgery. Playing on the Asian Tour was an awesome experience, and I'm really appreciative of them seeing my talent, I guess, but also just giving me the opportunity. And I think that's all I need to keep breaking down barriers and, to be honest, just achieve what I've always dreamed of doing.
Kip, talk us a little bit through your swing and your practice. How have you adapted your swing compared to a typical able-bodied swing and the changes that you make to be able to get the best out of your game?
So for those that don't know, I've got something called cerebral palsy, and I was born with it, and it basically means the muscles in my legs are very tight and contracted. So if you were to do a calf raise, that's how my calves are the whole time. With that come a lot of foot deformities due to the way I walked as a child. So until about the eight, I had my first major foot reconstruction when I was 16, and then the second one when I was 19, I think. And until those, I wasn't really able to rotate or use the ground at all. And so I had to learn how to play golf with my hands. I used to hit big fades, big cuts, not really turning, and only hit it 210 yards or so, 220. I managed to get to, I think it was round scratch at 19 or so with the limited distance. And that for me taught me how to control a ball in the wind, get the most out of every shot, be it carry it on a right to left wind or carry it on a left to right wind. And the biggest one for me is by putting and short game and wedge play. It's always been my strength. And I mean, I guess when I played the US Adaptive the other week, I showed that with the score I shot. Relative to adapting versus the other able-bodied golfers, power is a tough one for me. I have to work extremely hard on my mobility and gym work, and yeah, obviously then pains as well can be tough, but I mean, everyone's got the crosses to bear, and I think I almost enjoy that it's a little bit tougher on myself than able-bodied players. I think it's a superpower when the putt to win is a lot easier than any time I've spent in hospital beds. So.
I know you're such an inspiration to so many young golfers, and you give them hope. And I saw pictures and videos from you doing junior clinics, and you could see the smiling faces. How rewarding is it when you have that direct connectivity and that direct impact?
It means a massive amount to me. I think growing up, I never got picked for a golf team. I didn't play for the county team until I was nearly an adult. There was no opportunities for me to see anyone similar to myself. And so when I get to meet children with a disability, I think it means a lot to maybe be a source of inspiration. I'm very blessed to always been someone that doesn't need to see the light at the end of the tunnel to keep going and to stay motivated. But I know a lot of people do. And I guess I would just be really pleased with my career if I can continue to play this level of golf and better. Win and able-bodied tournaments, continue to demonstrate what disabled athletes can do, and see a tour when I'm 70 years old with more than 2 majors, prize money, and kids that have achieved more than anyone else thought they could.
Well, Kit, you should be so proud of the path that you are paving for the next generation behind you. And you are such an amazing role model with your life philosophy and just your attitude in life as well. So thank you so much. And a massive congratulations as well on the three-peat, a huge achievement. And we really appreciate your time.
Congrats.
Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Okay, still one more hour to come here on Golf Today. Stay right where you are. We'll be back after this. As we welcome you back into our studio here on Golf Today. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday. Anna Jackson alongside George Savarikas for the next hour. George, we have covered a lot this week. It's been a bit of a come down week after the Open Championship, the end of the men's major season. But as we've always said, there is still a lot on the line for a lot of these bubble boys fighting for points and everything to do with all the important stuff. Wyndham Championship this week, next week. Where's your mind at?
I think the tour got the FedEx Cup playoffs right when they shaved it down to 70 to create some more interest and excitement for events like this at the home stretch, the final two regular season events. If you remember a couple of years ago, Justin Thomas was trying to get into the top 70 and tries to hole out a chip on his last hole at the Wyndham Championship, finishes 71st, doesn't make it. He also had an eye towards the Ryder Cup that year as well. So I think we're going to see a similar scenario where there are big names, either just outside or inside the top 70, as well as players who are trying to accrue Ryder Cup points. And it's really go time here in the Wyndham. I mean, it's the last chance to loom. You have 2 weeks left. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see some players that maybe we haven't seen play certain events that they've added to the schedule.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. We've got 18 players in the field this week at the 3M Open, ranked between 60 and 80. So right on that bubble, some names like Gary Woodland, number 78, Chris Kirk, 77, Davis Thompson, 72. So these are the names that you kind of need to keep an eye on to see exactly what next season could look like and really the trajectory of what they do over the next couple of years.
Yeah, as the PGA Tour enters the home stretch with their season, first of two remaining events before the start of the FedEx Cup playoffs in August. Coverage of the 3M Open begins tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Golf Channel. One of those big names in the field, former world number one, Adam Scott, who is 85th in those FedEx standings. Adam Scott playing with Wyndham Clark, Chris Goddard. Both those guys look so good at the Open. They go off at 1:43 Eastern time for round number one as Adam Scott is getting ready to tee it up this week at the 3M Open.
Adam, your first time playing here at the 3M Open. Why did you want to add this tournament to your schedule?
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously I'm trying to make a run into the playoffs. I've got a little bit of work to do and, you know, really disappointing result last week at the Open. So I think the best thing I can do after that is come and play and get back on the horse. I feel like my game's been fairly good, so I don't really want to sit and dwell on that poor round Friday too long.
How do you regroup after a difficult week like that?
I think I've done it many times, and, you know, we have bad days, and it's not Friday of the Open. It's not the day you want to have a bad one, but it happened. And coming out here and hitting some balls yesterday, it was feeling good again. And I think, you know, it was just one of those things, unfortunately, and got out of my control a little bit there on the golf course. But try and get it all back on track this week and have a great week and make a move up this FedEx Cup points list.
You have been in the playoffs nearly every year since they started. Why do you enjoy being a part of that part of the season?
Well, there's a lot to play for. I mean, you know, it's kind of how we judge our season, rightly or wrongly, and also, you know, to set yourself up for a good year next year with the signature events being introduced, obviously, you know, that plays a part in everyone's scheduling and decision making. So it's really, you know, the better you do, the better you feel, and you want to be there at the end and having a shot at the FedEx Cup.
So Adam Scott playing this week and next at the Wyndham Championship. That was with Amy Rogers. And it seemed inevitable after the emotion that he had in trying to win that second major at the U.S. Open is in that final group at Oakmont. Seemed like such a great position. He was saying, and he just turned 45 last week, I might have 18 months tops where I can still maintain this type of form where I could threaten for a second major, that there would be a letdown at the Open, which he experienced at Royal Portrush.
Yeah, undoubtedly. I caught up with Adam Scott on that Saturday evening at the US Open where he had such a good chance. And I asked him, I guess, what's kept him motivated all of these years and what's kept him grinding so hard and getting up and still competing. And he said, the eternal search for a second major. Mm. It's always been so important to him. And I think he's maybe been a bit forgotten about over the last 5-10 years, that is such a massive goal for him. And he's worked so hard at the Open Championship. He always gets there so early every year. And winning the Open, he's come so close and had a fair amount of heartbreak there. So yeah, I think, as you say, the come down was real from Oakmont, and now he's clearly trying to break that top 70. So guys like Adam Scott, they still care. And he's had a busy year off the course as well.
Very much so, with PGA Tour Enterprises and being a big part of those conversations, especially trying to help broker the deal with the public investment fund at Saudi Arabia, LIV Golf, Yasser. I mean, he was privy to those conversations within the White House and direct line to Donald Trump as well. And with Adam, I had a similar conversation a couple of years ago at the Zozo Championship. He was saying he wanted to get that second major because he felt like that's what would cement his career as Hall of Fame. He didn't feel like he was quite there yet, which I disagree with. I think with everything he's done, worldwide victories, former world number one, first Aussie to win a Masters, that he's there. But he realizes the hourglass and the sands of time are going the wrong direction. And when you have an opportunity like you did at Oakmont, there's a chance that's the last time we'll ever see him in the final group of a major, or who knows what could happen. But it's so rare that someone stays competitive into their mid-40s and still has these chances.
And I think it's going to be a real reminder as well of just how much talent there is coming through on the PGA Tour as he's paired with Chris Goddard for the first couple of rounds at the 3M Open. I was listening to our colleague and friend Smiley Kaufman's podcast recently, and he said one of the key moments where he realized his best wasn't going to be his best anymore on the PGA Tour was when he was paired alongside an unknown name at the time, Chris Goddard, saw how far he hit it, and he thought, my best is never going to compete with the likes of this. So with so much youth coming through, as you say, Adam Scott's he's well aware that his opportunities are limited. So let's hope he can pick himself up from that disappointment.
But it is nice to see that even an elder statesman like Adam Scott is motivated by making the FedEx Cup playoffs and trying to accrue enough points to jump into that top 70. And he knows what's on the line. And I know golf fans in TPC Twin Cities at the 3M Open are going to be excited to see a player of Adam Scott's statures playing the event for the first time.
Yeah, a big name. He's been an icon in this game for a long, long time. So Adam Scott is in the field for the first time this week at the 3M Open, hoping to get into those FedEx Cup playoffs. But after the playoffs, as we know, all eyes will point towards Bethpage Black as we get set for the Ryder Cup in late September. Now the US are looking to take back the cup on home soil. All right, well, let's just remind ourselves of the US standings. It is the top six who will automatically qualify at the end of those FedEx Cup playoffs. Right now, it is Harris English, who has just clinched his spot in number six. Scottie Scheffler is a lock. Look at those points, 32,000 points. So he's already a lock. But then you've got some big names looking to play their way in or hoping for a pick, including Mr. Keegan Bradley, captain himself. And then over on the European side, the top six looking pretty good as well. You've got one of the Højgaard twins at number seven, a big name in Justin Rose. So it is crunch time for both US and Europe to earn their spot on this team, George. There are so many layers to this year's Ryder Cup as to what could make it such a good one, from the venues to the captains to the history on the line. So I'm posing you, George Savarikas, a bold prediction for what we might see at Bethpage Black this year.
And I like that it's not just predictions. We had to have the graphic roll in. It's got to be bold.
Bold.
We got to go big.
Yes.
Here. I think this classifies as bold. The Keegan Bradley, there's so much chatter if he should be a playing captain, if he shouldn't, how it would impact the team, if it would be a net positive, a net negative. I think Keegan is the perfect guy to be inside the ropes and inside the team room as a playing captain. I think he's going to play in three matches, have a winning record as the U.S. team wins, and he's going to be celebrated and cemented as this Ryder Cup legend, the first playing captain to lead a victorious U.S. side since Arnold Palmer. So I do think he's going to play three matches and have a winning record.
Wow, George. Bold. You are feeling bold on a Wednesday. I mean, that sounds like a fairy tale. This is sport. Sport is not a fairy tale. There has to be some reality sprinkled in there somewhere. A winning record? You saying 3-0? What are we talking here?
I think at least 2-1. 3-0 might be too bold for me. But I think at least 2-1. He looked great in the 2012 Ryder Cup at Medina. He was also teamed up again with Phil in 2014. He's the type of guy who loves being the man in the arena. And I think the Ryder Cup brings out the best version of Keegan Bradley and the added pressure of having to perform. Because if he picks himself as a captain's pick and has a losing record and they lose, then he's vilified in a sense. Then he gets so much of the blame. Oh, he stretched himself too thin. He shouldn't have played, blah, blah, blah. So I think that'll be just an additional motivator that will help Keegan perform.
Oh, I would not want to be in Keegan Bradley's shoes right now. Either way, it's a nice problem to have.
But if you're a competitor, and I get it's a lot going on, but I think if you're wired like Keegan, it could be a dream scenario to be in. What's your bold prediction?
Okay, well, you've gone US, so I'm going to go European. I'm going to go a little bit more nuanced. I'm having a bold prediction.
A deeper cut here?
That the Højgaard twins play together in a all-winning twosome in foursomes and fourball, unbeaten as the first set of twins to ever compete in the Ryder Cup. We're looking at the future of the European team. Now, Nikolaj already played in 2023, picked up half a point, and then went on to go and win the DP World Tour Championship that same year. Rasmus is just number 7 right now in the standings. He would be making his rookie appearance. But let us not forget what they did in New Orleans in the opening round in the team event this year. They tied the four-ball scoring record at TPC Louisiana. They shot 59 paired together. They've already made history as the first set of twins to compete at the Masters tournament this year. I just think what a fun storyline to have. And, of course, Europe would go on to win because they would pick up multiple points. But it's I think it could be, again, looking at the future of the Ryder Cup team, the Højgaard twins could be a permanent fixture in the next 5 editions or so.
And to clarify, the bold part isn't that the Højgaard twins would want to partner up. It's the fact that they would go undefeated and be this dominant force on the road in New York to help the Europeans get the first road victory since 2012.
Which is, we cannot underestimate how enormous that would be. We keep saying it, but you ask Rory McIlroy what he's got left to complete in his career. Winning in a way Ryder Cup is one of them. It means that much to someone like Rory, who didn't even buy into the Ryder Cup when he first broke out as a professional. So the history that is on the line for both sides, whether it's Keegan as a winning playing captain, whether it's Luke Donald going back to back overseas, it's just, it's mega. It's mega.
Just, I hope that Rory knows what time zone he's in and sets the proper alarm this time around. Doesn't need the police escort like in 2012 and the miracle at Medina. All right, when Golf Today returns, today marks such a special date in golf history. We're going to take a walk down memory lane and relive Tiger's historic 2000 Open win at St. Andrews. That was to then complete the career Grand Slam. That's next.
Yeah, when you look at every department of your game, driver, three-wood, long irons, mid, you know, Tiger was just about the best in every department. Certainly amongst his peers, the guys he was playing with, you know, over time you might say, well, maybe Jack was a little better at this and that, or Watson, or was Seve, or this. But for overall game, his whole game was running at 8.5 out of 10. Well, you're never going to beat a guy like that. And those, some of those weeks where he was ridiculous. The Pebble Beach one especially, you know, what we played through, the fog and all sorts of things, and then those bumpy Poana greens, and he's holding 40-footers. Most of us couldn't get it in from 4 feet, you know. But I'm very proud of that week. I finished 18 back. How about that?
Well, at least we can all laugh about it now, Sir Nick. But all year, we have been celebrating and reliving Tiger's historic 2000 season here on Golf Channel. And it is quite frankly hard to believe it has been 25 years since the Big Cat put together that epic 9-win season. So, George, we have got the honour and the pleasure to look back on a pretty special one today, July 23rd, 2000. Tiger becoming just the 5th man to win the career Grand Slam when he won the Open Championship at St. Andrews. So let's rewind, shall we, to some of the highlights. Second round, 17th hole, still bogey-free, leading by 3.
What creativity, what touch by Tiger Woods. Uses a slope, gets it to 8 to 10 feet. And of course, if he had been bogey-free to this point, he was going to remain bogey-free, rolls it in, saves the par.
Peak prime Tiger. Oh, we're going to miss these days. Second round 66, led by 3 strokes over David Toms. Now in the third round, onto the 8. That's a beauty. Kick-in range. Sets that up. Moves on. Onto the 14th.
And more from Tiger after a perfect tee shot. This is his second. And one of the best shots he hit in his career. Stevie Williams in the air said, "That the one you're talking about? That's the one right there, Tiger." Gave him a 6-shot lead after his 3rd straight birdie.
Good luck, everybody else. Birdie putt here as well on 18 to take back that 6-stroke lead heading into the final round. I love the pants. I mean, touch the Jason Days, 2024 now. It's bringing it back.
What's Tiger
style.
New again?
I guess so.
The lead 3 entering the final round here on the 10th. And then Tiger showed the getaway speed that he has, driving the par 4. That lead would only grow and grow and grow on the back 9.
And let's not forget, Tiger's only 24 years of age at this point. Scotty's young, but he's got 5 years on Tiger at this point in his career, just showing everybody, including the likes of David Duval, who's the boss now. That was to cut the lead to 2. Missed it. Tiger still has 10 feet for birdie.
And remember, they had traded off being world number 1. David had it in the late 90s, 98 to 99, and then Tiger grabs it in 2000 thanks to that victory at the U.S. Open and all the titles he had piled up. Pours that in. So that was a big 2-shot swing. Instead of it being a potentially 2-shot lead, it's 4 walking off the 10th green.
Yeah, that's why you've got some people walking off the grandstands as well, saying, "This is over." Nearly makes eagle here on 14.
Great touch from off the green. His 22nd and final birdie of the week.
Incredible. Amazing stuff from Tiger. Now on 18. What do they call this? The greatest walk in golf. Coming up the 18th at the Open Championship in front of an adoring crowd, knowing that the claret jug is yours.
And Tiger to break Nick Faldo's scoring record at the time. 19 under par. All smiles after winning by 8 over Thomas Bjorn and Ernie Els, completing the career Grand Slam. Remember watching that live. It's in the US Open, he won by 15. The British Open at the time, now the Open Championship, winning by 8. Just thinking, this guy is not human. How yeah. do you do that in back-to-back majors? The first of 3 wins at the Open, that was his 4th career major title. He was the youngest golfer to complete the career Grand Slam at just 24, and he wasn't done yet with more heroics. Part of that magical 2000 season, the playoff victory at the PGA Championship had 9 wins in 3 majors. Just ridiculous.
Amazing. And of course, it would be part of the second leg of the Tiger Slam as well. I'm not sure if we'll ever see anything like that ever again. The 2000 season of Mr. Tiger Woods. Okay, on the other side of the break, we're going to stay on the other side of the pond as the best in the women's game gets set to take on the Scottish Open. We will hear from world number 1, Nelly Korda, coming right up. Welcome back to Golf Today. Well, the Dundonald Lynx once again play host to the ISPS Handa Women's Scottish Open this week. This tournament is official on both the LPGA Tour and the Ladies European Tour, and coverage begins tomorrow at 4:30 a.m. Eastern on Golf Channel. So Lauren Coughlin returns as the defending champion this week. And last year, she picked up her four-stroke victory. At the time, it was her second win in three starts. And on Tuesday, she met with the media ahead of her title defense.
This will be one of two you'll be defending, obviously, CDKC later this year. But how does maybe coming into this week, does it change anything or is it, you know, steady as it goes?
Yeah, I feel like I was thinking about it a little bit coming into this week, just, you know, being like the first time doing it, you know, new fields and all that kind of stuff. But I feel like I'm trying to just do a really good job of just getting ready for this week and really only focusing on this week and what I need to do to play well again this year.
When you look back on this stretch of golf last year, what stands out as the difference in what you were feeling in your game and maybe are trying to recapture?
Yeah, I think a lot of last year I was just like having so much fun playing golf. It's so much fun out on the golf course, and I think that led to a lot of my really, really good play. I've had a kind of rough stretch the last like month or so. I was playing a lot better starting at Evian, and I just couldn't get the ball to go in the hole. But other than that, yeah, I feel like I'm just trying to get back to that, being a lot more relaxed and not trying so hard, and you know, want to do so well that sometimes you can tighten up. So just trying to get back to that relaxed, fun, you know, feels out on the golf course.
Yeah. And then last one, different tour, different circumstances, but do you take any inspiration from what Scottie Scheffler is doing or saying?
Yeah, I think his perspective is very unique, and I feel like something that we should aspire to, you know, just like the whole gratitude and that his worth isn't defined by him as a golfer. It's defined by him as a husband and a father, and it's definitely like very aspirational to be like, yeah, I want to be a good wife and hopefully a good friend and, you know, hopefully a good mom someday. And, you know, to not be so into like your identity as a golfer, and that's really hard and definitely something I struggle with at times. You know, it's something that we care so much about and we want to do so well that hearing him say some of those things, it's, you can kind of learn some things from him.
Had so many comparisons, especially last year, made between Scheffler, world number one, Nelly Korda. They both had 7-win seasons a year ago. They had those winning streaks, Nelly ripping off 5 in a row. But Korda still looking for her first win of 2025. 4 top tens this year, including a couple of runner-up finishes. What's been up with Nelly? Let's take a listen.
What's your experience with links, and do you enjoy it?
Yeah, I really enjoy it. It's a different type of golf. You just gotta have to kind of take it how it is. You know, you never know what kind of weather you're gonna get. But it's fun. I mean, you get really creative hitting different types of shots, hitting it a lot lower, trying to take off the spin off the ball. So it's definitely a lot of fun playing links golf, kind of mixing it up.
And then just last one before I opened it up, how do you talk about the weather, the creativity, how do you kind of prepare for a week like this?
You just gotta have to take it how it is. Just play golf. You don't know what kind of positions you're going to be, what kind of lies you're going to have, what kind of shots you're going to have to hit. So I think everything kind of technical or what you kind of have a game plan goes out the window and you just go out and play golf.
Whoever wants to? Obviously the first time in the Scottish Women's Open, Nelly, it's a big event in its own right, but are you looking one eye on next week as well, coming here?
No, I try to stay really present in the moment. You know, it's my first time playing this. I've never played links style golf heading into the Open, so we'll see how that goes. But usually I just try to stay very in the moment, focus on what's at hand, you know, the first tee shot coming up tomorrow, and then move forward from there.
Comparisons were being made between you and Scotty, just the way you were dominating the respective games last year. What do you make of what he's continuing to do?
Yeah, I mean, he's amazing. Obviously, just hats off to him. Not only is he a great golfer, but just also a great role model as well for kids to look up to. So I think, you know, he's one of a kind. He's just really succeeding at what he's doing. He's enjoying it. He has his values, and it's just very exciting to see.
You set a high bar personally last year. Where do you feel your game is this year, halfway through?
Yeah, obviously would have loved to lift a couple of trophies by now, but it's golf. You never know what's going to happen. But as long as I'm sticking to my process and controlling what I can control, I'm just doing my best.
10 years is a long time on the tour. Now, do you feel a bit of, I mean, you're a young a veteran when you look at some of the...
Definitely, yeah. I see some girls that are born in like 2004, 2003, and I'm like, oh my gosh. So definitely, you know, feel a little bit of a veteran out here, but I'm still enjoying it as much as I was
my rookie year. Does it get harder and harder each year? I mean, it's sustained excellence, isn't it? Not easy to keep going, is it?
I think if you enjoy it and you still have the love for it, I mean, it doesn't get harder. You just kind of enjoy being out here, yeah.
Nelly's saying she's making her debut in the Scottish Open. I can tell her one thing, it is going to be windy, as she was already getting a little taste of those conditions. She'll be playing alongside Charlie Hull and Lottie Woad, who is making her professional debut this week.
Yes, she is, George. Let's just give the viewers at home a quick reminder of some of Woad's highlights to this point in her career. Just in 2024, she won the Augusta National Women's Amateur in quite remarkable fashion, birdieing three of her last four holes. Big birdie putts as well on 17 and 18 to ultimately win by one. And then later that summer, she was tied for 10th in the AIG Women's Open and won the Low Amateur Award at St. Andrews. Such a surreal moment for her as well to stand at the home of golf alongside winner Lydia Ko. And then earlier this month, she won the KPMG Women's Irish Open at the LET as an amateur, shooting 21 under on the par 73 Carlton House Golf Club to win by six strokes over Madeline Sagstrom. She led by seven entering the final round and then shot 69 to run away with the title. So she entered the Amundi Evian Championship with 18 lead points, too shy of getting LPGA status. And after finishing the week in a tie for third, she locked up her 20th lead point in order to earn LPGA Tour status. And Woad made the decision to turn professional and makes her pro debut this week in Scotland. So let's hear what she had to say ahead of her big start.
Yeah, obviously very excited. Yeah, been thinking about, you know, making my professional debut for a long time, so really excited to, you know, do it more on home soil as well, so it's going to be really fun.
And you had an amazing finish at Evian. Can you just talk about what that experience was like and just the sort of process of turning professional and your thoughts behind it?
Yeah, it was really cool. Sunday was obviously a really fun day, being in contention and, you know, being close in the end. And yeah, and then obviously got my LPGA card from that, so it was a pretty easy decision once I spoke to, you know, my coaches and my team.
What's the reception been from the players? Like, have they been sort of saying welcome to the ranks, or has anyone been acknowledging the fact that you're playing your first professional tournament and giving you advice? Or?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, a few players have spoken to me, and yeah, everyone's really friendly, so yeah, it's been nice.
And if you had someone that you looked up to most amongst the pros, who's sort of been your inspiration?
I think growing up, I watched a lot of the English, you know, pros. So get to play with Charlie tomorrow is going to be cool.
Yeah, perfect.
So a couple of questions from Beth Ann. How does it feel any different being a professional so far?
Not really, no.
None at all?
No, just, yeah, trying to do the same as well as doing before.
Lottie Woad getting used to those cameras as a pro now. Reminder, here is how you can watch her professional debut, ISPS Handa Women's Scottish Open, Thursday, Friday, early, 4:30 a.m. Eastern time. And then on the weekend, you can catch it on the NBC Sports app as well, with coverage starting later in the day over the air. Before we get to break, let's get an update on the Epson Tour. The road to the LPGA this week, the tour heads to Highland Meadows Golf Club in Sylvania, Ohio for the Greater Toledo Classic hosted by Stacey Lewis. Here are some of the details. 144 players, 102 from the Epson Tour, 42 legends of the LPGA, 54-hole stroke play event, cut to top 45 Epson Tour players and ties after 36 holes, cut to top 20 legends of the LPGA players and ties after 36. This week marks the inaugural edition of this event. We'll be right back. It is time now to take a look at the newest preseason rankings for the PGA Tour University program, which is providing playing opportunities to the college game's best players. The player holds the top spot in these rankings following the conclusion of the NCAA Men's Golf Individual Championship will earn a PGA Tour card. So here are the seniors on the list. Ben James, number one, followed by Christian Moss for Texas. Texas has two of the top four. Michael Lasasso just won the NCAA Men's Individual Championship, currently number three. A lot to be sorted out. Those are the preseason rankings. So as a junior for the University of Virginia golf team, Ben qualified for a second straight U.S. Open after qualifying at Canoe Brook Country Club in Summit, New Jersey. He also went 3-0 in the NCAA match play, scored Virginia's lone point in their championship match versus Oklahoma State. They were the runner-up. He was a Ping First Team All-American this past season while becoming one of the 10 finalists for the Fred Haskins Award presented by Stiefel, which goes to the top player in the men's college game. And now he's joining us on the show here on Golf Today. A little summer break. I assume the summer amateur series for you just heating up. Clearly, we're catching you either in the middle of a practice round or about to wind one down. Where are you at?
So, yeah, I'm at Great River Golf Club. It's my home golf course in Milford, Connecticut. I've been a member here for, gosh, probably about 20 years. My grandfather worked here. My dad played here. So, yeah, this is definitely my home.
Yeah, you've got golf in your blood. We're going to get to that in a second, but I just want to touch on those rankings that we've just shown. You're currently top of the PGA Tour University rankings, which would punch your ticket to the PGA Tour if you can hold on to it until the end of the year. How much will you be thinking about that and the opportunity that could potentially be in your hands right now?
It's cool. We still have a year to go, but I mean, I'm just trying to get better every day and just kind of see where it falls. But no, it's definitely cool. The team has played great. I'm still trying to win a national championship. Definitely stings being so close this year, losing in the finals to Oklahoma State. Great match, but we're still hungry as a team, and that's definitely the main goal.
So is unfinished business the mantra for you coming back for your senior year?
100%. Being so close, playing that championship match, it was great just to be there, but definitely stung to lose. And I know all the boys fought so hard. So we're definitely all very motivated to try to get back there.
Ben, you're obviously so young and you're just at the beginning of your career, but you mentioned it there, your dad and your grandfather, big part of golf is always a big part of your family life. I love the story of when you were 4 years old, you're on a family holiday to Pinehurst Resort and you wanted to play in the US Kids World Championship and they didn't let you because you were four. But I read that you cried and then you came back the next year, competed and eventually won when you were 10. Talk us through that phase of your life being so young and just knowing what you wanted to do so badly.
Yeah, no, I didn't know what was kind of going on then, but my dad told me I was very disappointed. I guess I couldn't play because I saw all these young kids playing, and you know, it just kind of motivated me. My dad and my mom played a big part of that, helping to get me where I am as a person and golfer. And but no, just grandfather was always in the game, and he caddied a little bit, and yeah, that definitely kind of jump-started U.S. Kids Golf, my junior golf days, for sure.
What are the best lessons that your grandpa, your dad have taught you now to get you to this point where you're number one in the PGA Tour U rankings?
You know, just have fun because we play golf. It's just a game, and it's so much fun. You have good days, you have bad days, but just kind of being level-headed and just enjoying all aspects of it, because it's like life. Golf's a crazy game, but just trying to enjoy every step of the way, the travel, the friendships, and just build off of it.
Ben, you're a Connecticut boy. You said you're from Milford. Now, there's a reason why PGA Tour pros don't tend to live in Connecticut. The winter is awful. How did you adapt your game to get through those winters and still keep up the level of practice? And what did you tend to do during a Connecticut winter?
Yeah, you know, when I was a lot younger, I used to practice probably more than I did when I got older. But now, you know, hitting in like heated indoor, outdoor, hitting bays. I actually got a TrackMan when I was on the younger side, like 15, because you're hitting in the nets, you have no clue what the ball is doing. So we thought that would be a valuable investment for then. But when I kind of got to 16, 17, you know, I worked out a lot, played a lot of basketball, fell in love with that for a little bit. play on my high school team and just made some more friends that way. But when I was younger, definitely did a lot of practicing. But as I got older, I did definitely some other things to more so just keep me in shape and keep my mind off golf for a little bit over the winter time.
Well, and then you moved to the tropics comparatively in Charlottesville, Virginia, compared to what the winters were probably like growing up. You're trying to follow the lineage that we've seen with PGA Tour U number one. Ludvig Åberg was the first player to get that direct pathway to the PGA Tour. Then it was Michael Thorbjørnsen, Luke Clanton. Now, these are all big names who have already made an impact on the PGA Tour. For the audience maybe just getting familiar with your story, how would you tell them or how would you describe what your game and what you were all about?
Yeah, you know, I would say starting with myself, feel like I'm a pretty chill guy, very normal. Just like to do normal things. Definitely love Charlottesville. Made a ton of friends outside of golf and just like to hang out, be a normal college kid, but definitely my game. I love being at the golf course. College golf and college golf practice is the best. Practicing with eight of my buddies and just pushing each other every day to get better is pretty special. And if you could work the hardest on our team, we got a lot of hard workers. That's kind of what I strive for every day, just to be the first one there and last one to leave.
Well, it's a great attitude to carry into what should be a fun senior season with the Virginia. And best of luck going forward with those preseason rankings. PGA Tour U number one, he is Ben James.
Good luck, Ben. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you.
And what a performance we have seen from Chris Goddard. Remember the impact he made in college, first at Rutgers, then at Oklahoma. How about those couple weeks? The 26-year-old won the Genesis Scottish Open for his second career PGA Tour title. Heading to Scotland, he didn't even have a spot in the Open. He was able to stare down Rory McIlroy and get the job done thanks to a course record tying 9-under-61 during the second round. So thanks to the win, Goddard then plays himself into the Open the following week, made the most of it at Royal Portrush. What a week it was. Becomes the first player on tour to follow it up with two top three finishes there, the Genesis Scottish Open, and then the T3 at Royal Portrush in his Open debut. An incredible two-week run for Chris Goddard, who earned his second career PGA Tour victory at the Scottish, and thanks to those 2 weeks, jumped all the way from 117th to 23rd in the FedEx Cup standings. He is now ranked top 30 in the world. He had missed 8 of his first 12 cuts this year and has really turned things around, making 9 of his last 10, and he spoke with our Amy Rogers.
Chris, you're just coming off a huge 2 weeks, not only that victory, but also the third place finish at the Open. How have these last few weeks impacted your life?
Yeah, it's definitely been career changing for sure. A lot to look forward to next year and also this year, so it's been really exciting.
What do you feel like has changed the most so far?
I don't feel like anything's changed. You know, I feel like I'm the same person and but I do, you know, I know I've opened some doors for not only DP, but PGA Tour and some majors next year as well. So, it's just an exciting time.
You've also potentially opened a door when it comes to the Ryder Cup, playing your way into that conversation a bit. How much of that is a priority now over this closing stretch of the season?
The priority for me is just to finish the season strong and take each event as it comes. And, I'd like to be at East Lake and, there hasn't been anything other than, just me focusing on my golf. So let that take care of itself.